Dennis, my first question for you is, what is Unisonic doing? What are you up to right now? And talk a bit about what's going on currently.
Well, we're rehearsing a lot, preparing for a South American tour. And, yeah, other than that, that's pretty much taking most of our time, because there's a lot of things to do. You can imagine, you know, it's our first time together making a real tour, so we got to really consider this and that and decide things and practice things and get ourselves good and prepared for the shows. Other than that, that's pretty much it.
So, Dennis, talk a bit about how this whole thing came together and talk about how this whole thing started.
Well, became official like for 2 years when I've had the idea going around for quite a few years with Custer, because he worked with Bottom Row Promotion, and I was producing albums with Plasma and Dome and a few other things. And we had decided we'd like to try something with Michael, and we confronted him with the idea, and also with the idea of having Mandy Meyer, because Mandy's a guitar player I really like, and I get along with him really well, and I really like his style, because I produce some Crocus Records, excuse me. And because of that, I really was turned on by his way of playing and his whole musical career. So we brought the idea to Kiska, and she seemed to like it. Then we started off with some basic songwriting, got together as a foursome, working out demos and stuff. And then at one point last year, almost a year, Kiska was on tour with Aventasia, and so was Kai Hansen. And they apparently had seen each other for the first time in a long time and got along real well again, and decided they want to do something together, and the obvious would be to come into Unisonic. And because Kiska said enough times that he was not in the mood just to do a metal project, you know, not to full metal and super fast and whatnot. So the idea to come to Unisonic was then born. He basically asked if he could join the band. And we thought about it and considered it, and we said yes, of course. And then we started with him right away writing songs, sitting in the practice room, working the things out, and now we're here.
Now, you've obviously produced quite a few records over the past few years, and you know, my question for you, Dennis, is that, you know, you've worked with a lot of great bands and you've done a lot of great stuff. What are some of your favorite bands and people that you've worked with?
Some of my favorite bands, so I gotta say, Crocus, definitely. It's one reason Mandy's in the band. Even with the newer lineup of Crocus, it was a pleasure. Bands like Anger were always fun to do. There's a lot of stuff going on. There's actually quite a few. I do a lot of mixing in the meantime, so I'm doing less and less productions, because in the last few years, everybody's decided to go buy a Dell computer and sit in their cellars and make their own records. So I'm mixing all these records now, so I'm not producing as many. But I've done a lot of records I really enjoyed doing, and I really can't name too many off the top of my head. But those two stood out the most, Crocus and Anger, to be honest.
So how's the reaction been to this Unisonic record? You know, I could tell from my listeners that the reaction has been very, very positive, and I've received nothing but great feedback on the record and everything like that. And, you know, how's the reaction been for you? And have you received a lot of comments and a lot of inquiries from the U.S.? And maybe talk about the response so far to this album.
Yeah, we've had quite a few comments. Basically, want to know when the album would be released or if it would be released. The reactions over here on the European side of things has been very good. We're getting, so far, very, very good press. On a scale of 1 to 10, right now we're leaning around 8.5 to 9 in a lot of polls and reviews, so that's very positive for us. And we've made chart entries in over, I think, 15 or 16 countries, which was also very, very cool to hear. And yeah, I mean, I'm not a euphoric guy, so I can't really sit there and say everything's wonderful and great, you know. It's logistically looking real good, you know. But we'll see how it turns out in a couple of years from now. You know, that's when you really know if it was all worth it. But, you know, I'm optimistic, feels good, I'm enjoying myself, so not much that can go wrong now.
All right, and the other thing I have, I really loved the last Pink Cream 69 album, and you guys may be planning on doing another record down the road again.
Yes, we are. We've already started. It's in the making.
Well, that's great, because the last Pink Cream 69 album I really liked quite a bit. In fact, if I had to pick one record by you guys, I believe that that album, Intensity, would be my favorite right now. I still, to this day, still listen to it quite a bit, so... Anyway, you were talking a little bit earlier about producing bands and how you're doing more mixing as opposed to productions. And, you know, in my opinion, over the past, say, five to six years, the quality of band productions and productions of albums has gone down as a whole. And you think the fact that many people are trying to self-produce now instead of, you know, having a producer, do you think that has contributed to the lack of quality?
Oh, yes, definitely. It's also because of the budgets that are around. Let's be honest, the record labels aren't pushing out a lot of money for bands. The other problem is there's just too many bands, and all the labels try to make their money with whatever they can, so they reduce the budgets to get more outcome. And this means that the bands have to all try to get the record done any way they can, and that means... like not having a producer, producing themselves, going either to a local studio for parts of the recording and then maybe doing stuff at home or all stuff at home. And it's kind of tragic, actually, because I also have some pretty well-known things, recordings that they were in the past, and I've got recordings in front of me thinking, oh, my God, this is not exactly up to the standards that they had 10 or 15 years ago. But, okay, the budgets are small, but... yeah, it's a shame, because they really do sound like put it. I mean, I also get a lot of records and a lot of demos and stuff sent to me, and I'm pretty amazed at the crap quality, is the only way I can put it, of some records. And people don't seem to care, I don't know, or maybe it's just the budgets are so low they just can't do any better, or they all think so much of themselves that they really think they've done something good. I don't know. But I agree with you, it's really getting... pretty bad, and it's the shame of it is it's separating, it's making a big gap between the small bands and the large bands. Before, you know, you had a band that was like in the middle doing well, but it wasn't exactly Metallica, but they had a record that sounded great, it was fun to listen to, and you know, okay, they weren't a commercial success, but it was still a great record. Nowadays, you either got really great records and some really, really bad records that seem to get attention somehow. But all the records that are doing okay in the middle, no, there's not very many of them to hear, you know, just so much of the other stuff. It's a bit of a shame.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned budget, because, you know, a lot of people forget that record labels are just not giving bands the budget to produce records like they have in the past. And, you know, my question for you, Dennis, is that do you think illegal downloading is a big, big reason as to why... labels don't have a budget anymore?
Yeah, no. I mean, the possibility is there. Everybody's going to do it because it's just so easy. Let's just be honest, you know. Other things to keep I think I'd be clear about is the fact that producing a record has gone down and down, the budgets. Manufacturing an actual CD is cheaper than it ever was. There's digital sales that work pretty well, you know, so, you know, actually the price of the CD should go down. That's kind of amazing. I don't even remember, like, you know, 15 or when was it when DVDs came out? But 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I don't remember anymore. I just remember being really, really freaking expensive, you know? And in the meantime, they seem to be cheaper than CDs in a lot of cases, you know? I don't know why the record companies don't really follow suit and start reducing some of the price of the CDs, because it's really not fair in some cases. He's got a newcomer band, and he's basically forced to release his new record right next to Madonna and AC/DC, who might even be able to release it cheaper. And, you know, there's no competition. There's no chance. They don't have a chance in hell, you know. And besides the fact that everybody can turn on the computer, get a Wi-Fi connection, and just start downloading, doesn't make it easier. But I don't think it's the only reason. I mean, I copied on my cassettes when I was a teenager, you know, records with my buddies and stuff. It still wasn't the same as having an actual record in my hand to hold and look and collect, you know. I don't think there's much value anymore in actually having a CD in your hand and, you know, being able to physically touch it, as compared to when I was a teenager. The kids don't seem to respect that anymore. That's very true. But there's always a few that they do. They want to have some in their hands. Let's be honest, you know, if you're, you know, a tiger in a cage and there's a pile of meat over there, you know, and somebody says, hey, don't touch that. But you say, but all I got to do is move my hand and there it is. I got it. You're going to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all these kids that don't have money anyway, they're going to, they know that the option is there. They're going to go online and download the song. So, you know, I don't know if I can blame anybody other than ourselves. Technology is there. It's at hand. What the hell should we do about it, you know, and making all these laws? I don't know if it's helping anything. It's just we need to find another way to make this whole thing interesting. That's all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that.
Well, you know, one of the things, too, Dennis, that I've always been an advocate of is having that unbiased personality in the studio. You know, being a musician myself, I've always preferred to have another person's opinion, you know, as far as taking a producer role goes, because I honestly think that, you know, having that unbiased opinion really helps you out in the studio. And do you think that the lack of quality, too, do you think that that having a lack of a producer in the studio, think that's contributed to it?
Quality, yes, to a point, but I think it's more of, put it this way, I believe that a producer, well, now a producer, is basically more of a director than a producer. A producer is actually the guy that has the cash that wants to produce the product.
Mm-hmm.
A producer is actually someone that should be looking for, or looking at the best aspects of their artist and trying to tickle it out of them, trying to present the artist in the best light that they have. And I think a lot of artists have a problem believing or understanding where their strong points really lie. I mean, you take a rock singer, for example, and you say, hey, you know, when you sing All Gay and I, that sounds really great. Could you do it more? And he thinks, well, I don't want to. I want to sing Low and Grumpy. But nobody wants to hear you Low and Grumpy. But they don't want to hear this, the singers themselves, you know. So it becomes a bit of a conflict. And when you produce yourself, you can't, of course, not tell yourself these kind of things. You can't be that kind of a critical person to yourself, you know. So it does handicap the productions a lot, you know. It could probably go farther. But anyway, no one's making any big giant steps these days with their music. There's nothing special coming out. There's nothing revolutionary. There's everybody's just sort of following the next guy and, you know, trying to do something similar with his little twist. And I think if I hear of another genre on my iTunes, I'm going to freak out because I don't know how many different metal styles there are anymore. I've even had some kids come up and say, yeah, I played a neoclassic, progressive, metal, death, low tune, whatever. Like, Jesus Christ, what happened here? I mean, we played rock music, you know? Maybe a little bit louder, our guitars, but, you know, it was still just rock, you know? And, yeah, it's a shame, you know. People got to wake up if they want to start getting people's attention and just, yeah, how can I put it? You know, if you can get a producer, that's great, but at least take the opinion of somebody that you respect to make your music better somehow, you know. Too many musicians are too sure of themselves. That's a fact. That's a definite fact.
Mm-hmm.
And give some good examples. Some of the biggest flops in history have been from bands that produced their own stuff. For example, being a big AC/DC fan, I can't listen to Fly on the Wall to save my life.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, is a record that makes me cringe. And everything else they do, I like. And I go to the show, I always go to the shows, and I'm always going to be a big, big fan. But that record was a good example of how not to produce your own record. Iron Maiden has done it too,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. You know?
I would agree.
But I don't know if you've got to make the mistake first to understand that, or if you make the mistake and think, no, it wasn't my fault. I don't know. I really don't. But I do agree with you that it does make things worse and not better in the long run.
Well, I cannot agree with that more. In fact, Dennis, that's actually completely what I was thinking, you know, when I was asking you the question. So, you know, talk about the tour a little bit. And I know it's a little bit early. And I know for European bands, it's hard for you to come over here, but I have to ask you the question, being from the States here, has anybody made you any offers or made any inquiries about having you play some shows over here?
Well, not yet, not really. I mean, there's some ideas going on like that. I think it's called the 100,000 Tons of Metal, the cruise ship in Florida. I don't know. I think that was brought up once, but we will plan something for North America. But, of course, we want to wait and see what happens, because North America is just such a different market, you know. It's not an obvious metal or rock market where you can just sort of find a couple of clubs and play well. unfortunately. And we got to get to a certain status before we can really do this, you know, because there's so many logistics involved and then, you know, money and whatnot. And, time will tell, but I can definitely tell for all of us that we'd really like to do it, you know. But so far, nothing's there, I'm afraid.
Well, one of the things that I really like about this record is the fact that when you look at the lineup and you look at the chemistry, and you were talking about you actually obviously producing this album, but you have guys from different types of music for in a sense. I mean, Michael Kiske did the Helloween stuff, but he also did a solo stuff, which really isn't metal. Kai kind of comes from the speed / power metal genre. You and Costa basically played the more hard rock type stuff with Pink Cream. And then you got Mandy Meyer, who, you know, played with Asia and Goddard and played with Crocus. And what was it like to get all these different guys from different types of music to play together?
Well, it was easy and hard. It was easy just to sit in one room and say, let's do it. It was hard to actually do it. When we started, you know, there was a lot of issues that we had to consider. For example, like Kiske mentioned plenty of times that he was not in the mood to be in some kind of doomy, gloomy metal project. And I have to say doomy, gloomy, because that's probably one point that he never really got clear, because everybody said, oh, he hates metal. No, that's not what he said. He doesn't like this negative, bad energy, bad vibe music, which is pretty much where we all five click really well. Where we all agree, whether it's a ballad or a fast speed song or whatever, it's got to have a positive attitude to it. We want to make music that just is a bit more on the positive side, not this doomy, gloomy, everything is crap. You know, I think we get enough of that to hear every day. So that was the first thing that we had to overcome and realize that that's the main thing. And we said, what else do we want in our band? We said, well, we want a guitar band, you know. When we had started just with Mandy, we were considering getting some keyboards. But then when Kai came in, it was pretty obvious, this is going to be a guitar band. So that means we want to make guitar music, be it in the direction of Pink Cream or Helloween or Crocus or whatever, you know. That wasn't important to us. We were pretty sure that the stuff would fall together once we start working on it. We knew we were not going to try to make a Helloween 2 for a lot of reasons. First of all, that's just not my thing. Anyway, he's not a speed metal drummer, you know. Mandy is having a lot of fun playing for the first time in his life a little bit of speed metal, because we plan to play a couple of Helloween songs for live. And that's a new world. Complete new territory for him. And, those are the points that we figured out this will be easy. Actually getting the songs done was harder than, you know, we expected. And again, some things happened really easy. Other things were, we worked forever, and the results were not what we expected. One great example was a song, Starlighter, that I had actually written, at the beginning of the band, and I had, I think, honestly, 5 different choruses for the damn song. And we just liked the verse and the vibe of it, you know, and I kept trying to find chords. I couldn't get anything to it. And I was really frustrated and ready to throw it away, but Costa was so into it because it had a cool drum groove and he really wanted to get this on the record. And I walked in with my playback, who was my unfinished chorus, in Zakai's studio, and I said, listen to this, you know, we're having a real problem. I don't know what to do here, man. What could you do? What would you imagine? You listen to it once, and he says, well, I showed him my ideas, and he said, well, you know, I would sing something like this, and he started singing Star Rider. And that chorus, as you hear it, the melody and the lyric, I know this because I have the cell phone recording, because I record all my sessions in cell phone. Everything you hear, the melody and lyric, is exactly as he faked it on his first try. We changed nothing. And that's how fast it can go. You know? And then there's songs, there's one song, it's not even on the record, actually. It's not even recorded, not mixed yet, because we didn't bother. And we worked our asses off, and it just turned out that it just isn't the song, you know? So, what's easy, what's hard? I don't know. You know, what's a great picture? When you paint it in a month, or when you paint it in 10 minutes? I don't know, yeah.
Well, I have to say, too, I really like the name of the band, Unisonic. It's just got a really nice ring to it, and how did you come up with a band name like that? Because, I don't know, I just think it's really awesome. Maybe talk about how you named this band.
Yeah, there is. Well, of course, we're looking for a name, and that's no fun and not easy. I mean, that's something you don't do often in your life. And if you do look often for band names, you're probably not very stable with bands. So I've only had one official band and then a couple of kid bands when I was younger. I think everybody played Black Widow and Anthem and crap like that. I think we all had those names. We wanted something that would define the band. We were thinking in the direction of uni or togetherness for a long time, you know, and something with sound, you know, the idea like Soundgarden was always so cool, you know. We were playing around with some names that had something to do with unison and togetherness, and we wanted to have something like, you know, something to do with sound or music, somehow like in the direction of Soundgarden, we always thought to be kind of cool, you know. And after playing with all these words and trying stuff out, there was this, we had on a piece of paper unison, and then I think Sonic something was also, and I don't even remember the name, but at one point somebody just said out loud, unisonic, you know, and we all looked at each other and thought, okay, that sounds not bad, and we offered it to the other guys in the band and to the management, and everybody seemed to like it. Nobody, not one person said anything against it or something like, I don't know, give it some more time, think of something else, it's okay, but not great. Everybody seemed to like it. We immediately made logos and some basic t-shirts, and we were quite impressed with what we could do with it. So the name stayed, and that was pretty much it, you know.
Well, Dennis, one of the things that's kind of irritated me about this album, and it's really no fault of your own, is that, you know, people are seeing Michael Kiske and they're seeing Kai Hansen on it, and they're automatically thinking, well, you know, they're going to be, you know, there's going to be a... it's going to sound like Halloween, and it really doesn't. And some people sounded disappointed like that, but, you know, has that been a problem for you?
I'm not Marcus Grosskopf, and Costa's not Ingo, and Mandy's not Mikey, you know? And you got to keep in mind, when you make music, it's not just the song, it's the people who's playing them, you know? I mean, I'll give you a good example. How many times have you been to a bar, saw some Van Halen cover band, and thought, well, that don't sound like Van Halen? Even they're playing it note for note. I can play Halloween note for note, too. But you're going to go, well, that ain't Halloween. Well, hell no, I'm not Halloween. Sorry about that, you know? It's not what we intended to do. We never intended to do it. I mean, let's be completely honest. If Michael Kiske and Kai Hansen wanted to have success in the metal world and get a lot of attention, the most clever thing they could do would be to come together and make their own Halloween Keepers record.
Yeah.
You know? But if they were to do that, then they would do it with people that knew the scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Not us. Because that makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
I couldn't write a song for a Keepers record to save my life. I wouldn't know where to begin.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done it. I could help produce records like that. I feel real comfortable working with other people's music. But when it comes to actually making it, I don't think I made one song on the record that even sounds remotely in that direction. However, I'm always surprised when you read what the fans have to say about certain songs, that they're so convinced that this or that style is obviously from this or that musician, when it's really not the case at all. To give an example, on our Facebook page, there's quite a few people writing about a song that was called Souls Alive, that had an obvious Kai Hansen influence. But the reality is, that song was written 2 years before Kai Hansen even got in the band.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by Mandy Meyer. And I wrote the melody and the lyrics, and that's it. You know, Kai had nothing to do with it, but people still tie that together for some reason, which is fine for me. I think it's actually quite cool. But I know from my side that even if I really tried my best, I could not make a Keepers record because I just don't know it. I'm not from there, you know. So I know that I've read some stuff too where some fans were actually kind of disappointed, you know, even though we said many times that we had no intention of making a Halloween cover band, and that we had no intention of trying to ride on their coattail, you know, and that we couldn't do it if you wanted to. So I'm sorry for the people that are upset or a little disappointed about that, but, you know, we don't feel bad about it because it was never our intention. And it will never be our intention. We're not going to make a Halloween reunion group here. We are, in the future, going to try to find more of our thing, our way, our style. You know, we're still a new band. We're developing. But I can assure everybody that style will have very, very little high-speed double bass drum in it. There'll be the occasional place where it comes out, and Kai will still write songs the way he does. But an actual Halloween thing, purposely, we'll never do it, no.
Well, Dennis, I'm glad you put that in perspective, because a lot of people are automatically thinking, oh my God, this is going to sound like Halloween, and it really doesn't. But at the same time, you know, the strength of this band is basically the fact that all five of you have come from making different types of music, you know, metal music, hard rock, whatever. Everybody came from a different type, a different subgenre of this music, and I think that's awesome, and I think that really attributes to the fact that this album is very good, and why it's so diverse when it comes to the songs.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, we got kind of worried. You know, those two songs are quite different from each other, and like I said, we'll eventually develop into more of a red line in the future, I'm sure. You know, right now we're trying shit out. You know, we're trying this, trying that, and see what happens. At the end of the day, we're all playing on the records, and we made sure that, like, for example, the guitars are really split, that one guy played this guitar and the other guy played that guitar, so it wasn't, you know, somebody playing this sometimes and this one sometimes. It was really two-guitar band, and all our influences were there, and, you know, try to keep it as real as possible, you know. Of course, there's a couple songs that stand out, you know, they're not exactly the same. However, then we have some songs like King for a Day and Star Rider, which have a lot of similar influences, even though they're written by different people. You know, it's at the end of the day, we just want to make good songs. You know, we're not looking for a definite thing at the moment. We're hoping it'll come together. We just want to make good songs. And that was our goal when we made the record. Okay, if somebody came with a techno dance song, we're not going to play it. Sure, obviously. Okay, how good it is. Like I said, we made our borders were that we want to make guitar music and we want to make melodic music, and that it has to fit to Michael's voice. That was priority number one, you know. The actual style of the song itself is not so important as long as it rocks,
mm-hmm.
You know. It could be a little bit more modern, it could be a little bit punky, I don't care. It could be a little bit technical, I don't care. It just has to fit to Michael's voice. It's hard to do, actually. When you're in the metal or in the rock scene, if you've identified yourself at an early stage as being a one thing band, it's really hard to go left and right. I can give you a million examples. I mean, come on, AC/DC is kick ass, but you want to hear a song like The Creed from them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing it would be with Iron Maiden. You know, leave the grunge, you know, we don't need that. Do your Maiden stuff, we love that. And then you've got bands like Queen that have done everything. I mean, they've done metal, they've done theater music, they've done pop, they've done dance, and always get away with it, you know. That's an extreme example, you know. But I think one reason that they were able to do that is because in the very beginning they didn't, you know, they didn't make a mark in themselves that says, hey, that's what we do and that's it. You know, they showed right away we're versatile. We can do this, we can do that, you know. And we're trying to, I think we're going to try to do that too. However, we still want to find more of the red lines in the future. I don't think it's going to deviate too far away from what we're doing right now. But then again, it's hard to say. You never know where trends take you, because people follow trends, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, our goal is just to make good songs, good guitar songs, good melody, and then that's basically it. That's as easy as it is for us.
An album that I really liked was Food for Thought by Pink Cream 69, and I have to ask you this because it's still one of my favorite Pink Cream records, but, you know, you guys recorded this around the time grunge was still big, and I know it was very difficult for you, and maybe share some memories about recording the album Food for Thought.
Okay. Well, that was the record I think we made after Change, right? Yeah. First, we got to talk about Change, understand that record. Because on the record Change, we went to the States. We were produced by Shea Baby in Calabasas, Los Angeles, California. And we made a big shift from what we conventionally had done. You know, it wasn't the melodic hard rock. It was all of a sudden, yeah, grunge, way to put it. that because they didn't come over in Europe very well, not as well we expected. We had our fans, but, you know, our hardcore fans, they wouldn't accept it. So we wanted to migrate back, we thought. But first we thought, you know, we've done this, let's just make a record. Let's collect songs, let's make a record. It's pretty much my philosophy anyway, you know, make good songs, see what happens out of it. And we had our new singer, Dave, at that time, he was new. And that was the first record that I produced with the band, where I said, you know, I trust myself and I can take care of all the details of recording and producing and whatnot. And we can, first of all, save a little bit of money, and second of all, spend a lot of time working on the record as good as you want to, you know. And so we took it in consideration, we worked on the songs. We knew that we were not going to make a record like Change, but we also knew we couldn't go all the way back to what we did for two reasons. Number one, nobody was listening to it, you know, so we wanted to try to do something kind of modern at the time that somebody would listen to. And the other thing is, if you made that drastic jump back, people wouldn't take you seriously, you know. Well, at least we think so. So we made that record, you know, basically thinking we'll make this record. If it works, well, great. If not, you know, well, that was the end of our career. So that'll do it. So what? And fortunately, it got a pretty good acceptance. You know, we didn't get rich from that record or anything, but we got, you know, we established ourselves as being, you know, we're strong. We're not going to fall down yet. We still got a little bit of time to go. And directly after that, we made our Electrified album, which was obviously more in the direction of our past, the beginning of our past. But however, still a little bit, you know, a little bit floppy, grungy side, just a little bit, you know, just enough.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the Food for Thought was basically just collecting songs, and it was a singer-songwriter record almost to a point. You know, we had some heavier songs, but, yeah, we didn't take that record that damn serious, you know, to be honest, from what I remember. Like I said, it was my first time producing Pink Cream, and it was a lot of fun. I remember that record being a lot of fun because we were in a local studio that I'd rented out, and after we'd done a day of recording, we spent the whole night playing Duke Nukem or Mega Racer on a computer set up in the back, and that was just fantastic, you know. That was a really good memory. We really took it easy. We took that so damn easy, the whole record. Experimented with crap, you know, tried stuff out that we always wanted to try. For example, playing an electric piano through a Marshall and shit like this, but, you know, it was not allowed, I guess. But we did all kinds of strange stuff and just enjoyed the hell out of it, you know. And I like listening to that record just because it reminds me of how open we were and how careless we were, and, you know, in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a really good feeling to know that we could make music and don't care what anybody else thinks. And whatever happens to it, I don't care. I got a life, you know. It's just music in the day. Just music. It's not brain surgery. And I think that's all we wanted to say with that record is, look, we make music. That's what we're going to make now.
Dennis, for my last question, do you have any last word to say to the fans that are going to be listening to this interview on the air?
Only that I hope to give the album a chance, have us listen to it, and, you know, if you have anything to say or any comments you want to make to the record, come visit our Facebook page, you know, and say anything you want to do, you want to say, get it off your chest, you know, let us know what you think about the whole thing. Accept us, please, for what we are, and don't expect to get a Halloween because we're not that. That's pretty much all I ever want to say.